Welcome to Technology and the Arts, a bi-weekly podcast exploring the connections between the worlds of technology and art. In this installment, we'll hear from Janie Herman and Evan Klimple of the Princeton Public Library in New Jersey about the library's poetry podcast, which ran in April. Plus, we'll discuss the hole Dig has dug itself into, Microsoft's pursuit of Yahoo, Google SketchUp, and Pete Townsend's new music recording and sharing website. And as usual, we'll share some helpful websites and online resources we have come across recently. We'll talk about all of this and more just ahead on Technology and the Arts for Wednesday, May 16th, 2007. Now here are your hosts, Brian Kelly and John Lemazney.
Welcome to another edition of the Technology and the Arts podcast. As always, Technology and the Arts seeks to explore the connections between technology and art and to establish a forum for discussing the impact technology has made on the human creative process and on literature, music, and the visual and interactive arts.
And to let you know who we are, my name is Brian Kelly. I'm a journalist by trade, amateur songwriter, musician, and science and technology enthusiast living in central New Jersey.
And I'm John Lemazney, a father, artist, musician, poet, and technologist living in the Mid-Atlantic region.
Taking a look at what's on the palette for this podcast in our In Perspective segment, we'll discuss our latest finds on the internet pertaining to technology and the arts, including the hole Dig has dug itself into, Microsoft's pursuit of Yahoo, Google SketchUp and America's favorite architecture on Google Earth, and Pete Townsend's new Lifehouse Method music recording and sharing website. Also, I will be giving a mini review of the first blockbuster of the summer movie season, Spider-Man 3. Then in our dialogue segment, we'll hear from Janie Herman and Evan Klimple from the Princeton Public Library in New Jersey about the poetry podcast they oversaw during Poetry Month in April. But before we get into all that, John, it's good to see you again. What have you been up to?
Well, I just wanted to say it is fantastic weather outside, and it's such a nice day that Brian and I decided to do this podcast while walking around my neighborhood. I also wanted to mention how much we enjoyed, again, Trenton Computer Festival, and it's almost a distant memory now, but we did have such a good time. I just wanted to say thanks again to Saul Liebes and the rest of the folks at Trenton Computer Festival. Fantastic festival. Can't wait to go back next year. The things I'm going to be doing in the near future include the Princeton PC Users Group. I'm going to be presenting there in October. The Brookdale Computer Users Group, that's going to be coming up. I'll give you more details as that gets closer. And just generally speaking, since the Trenton Computer Festival is over and done with, and the semester at Rider has come to a close, my presentation frequency is about to drop quite a bit, which I'm thrilled about, because as much as I love presenting, it's nice to get a break too, and I'm really looking forward to summer, and today's a great example of what we have to look forward to. How about you, Brian?
Well, I want to echo your comments on summer, and with summer approaching, with those of us here in the United States, Memorial Day being the traditional opening to summer, I just want to point out that Technology and the Arts will not be having a podcast in 2 weeks because of the Memorial Day holiday weekend. Instead, we will be back on June 6th. So make a note of that. Yeah, so we'll have some extra time off, and which I think is much deserved at this point. We've been kind of burning the candle at both ends with this podcast. And not only is it start of the actual summer season with the release of Spider-Man 3 on May 4th, it is the start of the summer blockbuster movie season. And I saw Spider-Man 3, and I will be giving a mini review of the movie a little later on in the show. And I just want to remind our listeners again about the Wave Gathering Festival taking place in Asbury Park, New Jersey, May 18th through 20th. The Wave Gathering features at least 150 artists at nearly 20 venues in Asbury Park. Former Technology and the Arts guest Christian Beach will be performing on both days of the festival. You can go to myspace.com/Christian Beach or follow the link in the show notes and check out his website regarding dates, time and venue for those shows. The festival also includes some music industry panel discussions, which will likely cross over into technology issues, such as DRM, the current state of internet radio, and the anti-RIA movement. Not sure about that, but you know, I'm pretty sure something will be talked about that will be relevant to this podcast, so I am going to be there, and I'm going to try and get some interviews for the show during the weekend.
By the way, we're not getting on a plane. That's somebody cutting their grass as we're walking by.
Yes, you're just going to have to get used to some of the au naturel background noise of this podcast.
The naked noise.
Yes. But now, let's get to our In Perspective segment. This is where we discuss recent headlines, hot topics, or helpful and interesting websites we have discovered recently. John, what would you like to put in perspective for our listeners?
Well, I just want to talk about a couple things. The first thing I want to talk about is the fiasco on Dig. There's really no other way to put it. It was an absolute nightmare for founder Kevin Rose. What happened was this. There was a story that involved a code, and the code, which is 09F911029D74E35B D84156C56638C0. That code, just by us putting it into our podcast, puts us in violation of a DMCA agreement with the HD DVD folks, who use that code in order to encrypt the data of the HD DVD format. And so the reason that the code is so important is because if you can use that code, you can break the encryption on an HD DVD movie. This was found out by hackers, made public. The publication of the code is apparently legally pursuable. If you publish the code, you can be sued for trying to break the copyright under the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, or the DMCA. That was the core of the issue with Dig. So if you know this code, you can, for instance, put it into a ripping application and get the movie off of an encrypted DVD, HD DVD, and onto your hard drive and into an editor or into the hands of peer-to-peer file sharers. This is a technology story. Technology stories end up on Dig. Popular technology stories end up on Dig. And Dig published this story along with any other story, just like any other story. And it got pretty high up on the ranking at Dig. So the HD DVD folks contacted Dig and said, take down anything referring to this code or else we'll take legal action. And Dig said, we'll get right on that, taking down all the stories that people have submitted about the code. And they stated about how they were taking down the code because they didn't want to get sued. They're in the business of publishing a site. They're not in the business of getting sued. And the users said, hold on a second, whose side are you on? We're supposed to be a news service that is the voice of the people, you know, regardless of who wants something to be said. If it's the truth, it should be allowed to be published. And you're saying that based on threatening legal action from an external source, that we can't do that. And as it turns out, Dig Nation, which is the podcast that talks about the most popular stories on Dig from in a given week, was getting money from HD DVD. And so there was an obvious conflict of interest in publishing a popular news story, which is what Dig is supposed to be about, versus HD DVD giving Dig Nation money for a commercial at the beginning of their podcast. And so that's where the problem started to occur, because as soon as Kevin Rose started to take down stories and eject users for publishing, trying to publish stories involving this code, the users revolted and made it impossible for anything else to get published on the site that did not have to do with this code. They decided that if you say we can't publish what we want on your site. And this is supposed to be about publishing what we want and making the most popular story the top story. What's the point of Dig? You know? And so they said, if this is the death of Dig, if you don't allow us to publish what we want, you're going to lose your site. If you're worried about losing the site due to legal action, you ought to be worried about losing all your users due to censorship. And so it was an absolute fiasco. For about 24 hours, the stories involving the code were suppressed. And after 24 hours of Dig not really doing anything except fighting their own users, Kevin Rose decided to put out an announcement saying, you know what, we should be for our users, and we should be doing what's right for our users, and we're going to stop trying to take down these stories. And if we get sued and taken down for that reason, then at least we went down trying. And there was a little bit of a backlash about that too, because people were saying, well, of course, you know, you're going to do that because your site's not going to be usable, and you're not going to have any users on it. You know, there was no way for Dig to come out of that unscathed.
Damned if you do, damned if you don't.
So at least they came out with a continuation of the site. The site is still up and still has users in it. So at least that's something to look at as a success. But I mean, what it really said was Dig is run by a mob. And there will be no censorship in Web 2.0 technology-based sites, because if the users can say what they want and the site is only effective with users in it, then it's the power of the people. Microsoft and Yahoo. It looks like Yahoo is being targeted as a purchase by Microsoft. And this is sad news, because aside from Google, Yahoo is really the only search engine that is actively developing great products. There are companies like Ask.com that are doing some interesting things, but they are no Yahoo and they're no Google. So here's the thing. If the day that Microsoft decides to buy Yahoo, my Delicious account goes away. My Flickr account goes away. My hosting, which I get through Yahoo, goes away. I don't want Microsoft to have all that information about me, and guaranteed they have all the information they want about me, but the fact that they would own the servers where I hold my data and where I have pictures of my son and all those sorts of things, it's just icky. I don't want Microsoft to have their hands on the stuff, the personal stuff about my life.
Well, the minute Microsoft owns it, it'll turn to crap anyway. So.
Right, they'll stop developing it, they'll turn it into some, you know, Windows-centric crap, and it would really be sad. And finally, I want to talk about Google, a Google product called SketchUp. There's a free version just like Google Earth, and SketchUp can be used with Google Earth. So what is SketchUp? SketchUp is a 3D editing application where you can create three-dimensional models, much like you can with the open source project called Blender. But one benefit that SketchUp has over Blender is that it is infinitely easier to use. Has great tutorials, and Blender has tutorials too, but having used both of them and not necessarily being an experienced three-dimensional artist, I can say that Blender is more of a professional tool that you can do a lot of, you know, animation and video and all kinds of other editing using three-dimensional models, whereas SketchUp is a great tool for specifically modeling real-world objects and placing them in the virtual world of Google Earth. Great tool. You should go and check it out. That's SketchUp. SketchUp. How about you, Brian?
Well, speaking of SketchUp, SketchUp has allowed for 3D renderings of what is being called America's favorite architecture to be placed in Google Earth, and that's to celebrate the 150th anniversary of the American Institute of Architects. So if you have the right layers turned on in Google Earth, you can see renderings of these 12 structures that were named America's favorite architecture through a poll taken by Harris Interactive, and it includes buildings, bridges, ballparks, and memorials. So if you have Google Earth installed, go check that out. And another thing I want to talk about is the Lifehouse method. and you can find a link to that in the show notes. But the method is described as software that creates music, allowing you to sit for a musical portrait just as if you were being painted, according to the website. The software paints your music, and it has been developed under the patronage of The Who's Pete Townsend by mathematician and composer Lawrence Ball and software developer Dave Snowden. After registering on the site, you will be entitled to 3 free portrait sittings and free access to the website until July 31st, after which time you will be offered the option to continue access to the site on a subscription basis. After you've recorded your method portraits, you can download them, play them back at your leisure, share them with your friends, etc. So go check that out if you're interested. And now it's time for my review of Spider-Man 3, which is a promising start to what looks like a stellar summer movie season. You have Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End coming out at the end of May, The Simpsons movie in June, and then later on in the summer, Fantastic Four, Rise of the Silver Surfer, and on July 4th, Michael Bay's live-action CGI Transformers movie, which I am extremely excited about. First, about Spider-Man 3, I'll have to say, you know, the regular cast did a tremendous job as usual. The additions were excellent, I felt. Thomas Hayden Church as Flint Marko, a.k.a. Sandman. Topher Grace as Eddie Brock, a.k.a. Venom, and Bryce Dallas Howard as Gwen Stacy, who in the comics was an integral part of the early Spider-Man mythology, but her character's a little bit different in this film. And, Bruce Campbell's ubiquitous cameo in the Spider-Man movies is hysterical this time. He plays a faux French maitre d', so... Now, the plot, the action is great. The action is great in the movie, by the best of the three movies. The plot, it's decent, but some of the elements of the plot are a little bit silly, especially in the resolution of the Sandman character. I'm sure when you see the scene, most people will probably feel the same way. It's a little bit of a reach and a little rushed, but other than that, I thought it was an excellent, enjoyable summer movie. It was fun. The ending may disappoint some fans without giving too much away. You know, the first two installments of the Spider-Man franchise showed Spider-Man triumphantly swinging throughout the city. You know, they had the American flag at the end of the first one and, you know, the Go Get 'Em Tiger scene at the end of part two. This is different. Other than those criticisms, I mean, it was a very good time. I enjoyed it. And, you know, I would like to see Sam Raimi and company all come back for another go, but I can't see it happening, really. I think that this was the end of this version of Spider-Man. I think from here on out, if Sony decides to do more, it'll be, you know, different director, different cast. So, but I think this was a fitting conclusion to the trilogy. Yeah, I don't think it was the best of the three, but it was still a very good movie. And now it's time for the Technology and the Arts Events Calendar.
This is your Technology and the Arts Events Calendar from Friday, May 18th through Sunday, May 19th, 2007. Catch the Wave Gathering Festival in Asbury Park, New Jersey. The festival features more than 150 musical artists playing at nearly 20 venues in Asbury Park throughout the weekend. For a full schedule and more information, please visit www.wavegathering.com. Soundmarks, an exhibit employing both traditional technologies and new media, opens June 8, 2007 and runs through August 17th at Art Interactive in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Artist Amy Stacy Curtis and the collaborative team of Zach Poff and N.B. Aldridge experiment with the ways in which art can serve as a catalyst for common experience and a site for community exchange. The 5 installations in Soundmarks encourages us to recognize the creative potential of the sounds in our environment and to consider what they might teach us about our community and ourselves. For more information about Art Interactive, including exhibit hours, visit www.artinteractive.org or call 617 408-498-0100. To stay informed about these and other events related to technology and the arts, please remember to check out the Technology and the Arts events page at techarts.wordpress.com.
Well, it's now time for our dialogue segment, during which we hear from those who work with technology and art on an everyday basis. This week we'll be hearing from Janie Herman and Evan Klempel from the technology training team at the Public Library in Princeton, New Jersey.
Janie and Evan were instrumental in setting up the Princeton Public Library's poetry podcast during Poetry Month in the month of April. So John and I had a chance to sit down with them and ask them about the project. And this is what they had to say.
If we could talk about a description of the project as it stands now.
The project started out as a way to promote National Poetry Month, something that we've always historically done here at the Princeton Public Library as a celebration for National Poetry Month. And this year we wanted to put a little bit of a technology angle on it, and we had also been looking for a way to enter into podcasting here at the library, and we saw this as our entry point.
Could we talk about the history of the project in terms of sort of what came before and how you got into what it is now?
We had been considering doing podcasting at the library for close to a year now. And in the fall, when we had our Children's Book Festival, we did record several authors as they did readings. And we originally put up the files on Podomatic. Right, Evan? Correct. And we still have those files, and we're looking for a way to make them accessible. But we became disenchanted with Podomatic due to the amount of advertising. And as a public library, we didn't want advertising. So after that, we were looking for a new project, and we have a very active poet group here, the US One Poetry Group, who does a monthly reading at the library. So I knew I had a built-in group to solicit from, and also through our magazine connections that I would be able to get further participants.
Let's talk about your technology workflow from start to finish. What's your workflow?
For this project, we started out a long lead time, actually about December, getting out the word that we were going to do this, because we wanted to get at least 25 to 30 poets willing to do this and to do original poetry, so we knew it was going to take some time. That was the first part of our workflow. I collected in, through email, the names of the poets. They sent me files of their poems and their biographies, and there was a little bit of selection process, but not much going on there. And once we assembled that, we set up a night to do the recording. Want to talk about that, Evan?
Sure. Well, what we did is we set up a laptop with Audacity software, and it's free software that allows us tremendous control over the final product. You can go ahead and make incredibly minute edits, exclude all kinds of noise in the background, and so we set up that on the laptop and recorded the poets. And once we went ahead and recorded them, then we went and edited them, put some effects on them to amplify them, boost the volume level, be very clear on the internet. The one downside to doing that is you also boost all the background noise, you boost anything that you don't want in there. And then actually going in and editing out and editing out all the various noises from a very deep breath to someone with a runny nose, you can actually get every bit of that out of there. As long as the person isn't talking, you can remove it with no effect, even in the middle of certain words. Difficult edits, but very loud sounds that just needed to come out could be removed and were removed.
Do you have an audio engineering background?
No, I don't, though I have used a number of audio editing tools like Pro Tools, which is a full-blown studio package, and a few others along those lines.
What are some of the main differences between tools like Pro Tools and Audacity?
The major difference is with Audacity, you're kind of limited on doing a one take straight through, and you can edit in other takes, but it's very difficult to synchronize them to try to do it, whereas a full-blown package like Pro Tools, you can easily sync them. Your control over various levels on there is also limited, but as far as a free package goes, you really do have a great amount of ability.
So I'll add that most of our podcasts were recorded in two sessions. We were having a poet invite at the end of March at the library. So I set up a scheduling, and each poet was allowed about 10 minutes to come in. We asked them to prepare poetry in the length of 3 to 5 minutes. They had a choice of one longer poem, two or three shorter poems. That was up to the poet. We already had all the text files from the email. So they came in, Evan recorded them as I did the exit. I was there with the camera. We took a picture to go up to try and get some standardization of the photos for the blog. And we basically had all of our files mostly collected by early April. We had a few other people come in at various other times, but we basically did two long sessions, and it was amazing how quickly we could get, you know, 10 poets done in a night really quickly, in and out, and we had three of us working on it, Romina with the schedule, Evan recording, myself with the camera, and we just rolled them through. So once that was done, then it was on to WordPress.
Yes, which had its own struggles and some various issues that were tough to deal with at first, especially with the HTML codes, that they had some difficulty handling them because they had a tendency to replicate themselves. Font tags would duplicate themselves in place of line breaks, and you would also have the images and the way they were handled link, and it would keep replicating that and dropping a link tag down into the text of poems, and every time you would do a save, it could move it further and further. So there were a lot of issues to control with WordPress, but once we got them handled, it worked excellent.
I mean, one of the other problems that we had was finding a format that would allow us to stay true to the lines of the poetry. And poetry is very precise, and I know there were some poems that we just couldn't get the indents sometimes, or the nuances of the poetry as we wanted. We tried to be as close as we could. We actually ended up formatting it a little differently than we'd originally intended to give ourselves the most flexibility for making the poems appear at the proper line break, and that was, of course, of the most extreme importance.
Absolutely.
And a lot of time was spent going over the poems to make sure that they appeared in their true self.
Well, one step actually that we skipped over was the use of archive.org. Post all of our audio files and uploaded all of them there, created a separate page, which also gives our poets a nice product as well at the end, where we've gone ahead and contacted all of our poets, given them links to it. They now have a permanent page where they can download audio files, email it to friends, family, publishers, link to it from their websites to promote their work. And, you know, it's something that we were able to give back to our participants.
We had a hard time deciding, you know, the order of the poets to go in. We definitely, you know, we definitely started with Paul Muldoon for a reason, you know, to give us that gravitas, so to speak. But, and, you know, he brought us in a lot of hits, and, you know, we're really grateful that Paul Muldoon would take the time out of his busy schedule to come. But we had a lot of other surprising things that happened. One of our best ones was Sophia, and I don't know how to pronounce her last name, a high school student.
Littors and Grinsky.
Yeah, Sophia, a high school student who came and recorded beautiful poetry for us, and she has gotten an incredible amount of attention. You know, probably from her friends and family a large part, but from other people who have discovered her. And so we've had, you know, a variety. I think our youngest poet then would be a teenager, and we had Shanti.
Shanti.
Who recently celebrated his 75th birthday.
Right.
So we we had poets of all ages, we can say.
Is there anything else you'd like to say about the project?
Oh, I just want to add, we're talking about the tools, and this is an important part of our project. From the standpoint of a library viewpoint, is a lot of libraries, public libraries and academic libraries as well, are looking at ways that they can incorporate podcasting into their services for their patrons. And there had been a fair amount of discussion that I had been involved in, both formally and informally, about, well, how can we do this, the resources and so forth. So when we decided to do this, even though we could have done it all in-house and on other means, we decided to try and do it in a way that it would be totally free. And I'll be probably, you know, I have already blogged about it at Library Garden, but we wanted to set an example for smaller libraries to say, you can go onto Audacity and record, you can host at archive.org, you can use the free version of WordPress, and you can indeed do successful podcasting ventures at your library for the price of a microphone, as long as you have a laptop or a computer to record to, which, of course, most public libraries would. So, I mean, we really had a lot of goals in mind here, and it was primarily about the poetry, but then it was also about the technology and finding a way that we could use the technology and do a project that cost us nothing more than our time.
I just wanted to say thank you so much to Janie and Evan for their time and expertise, and also for bringing the beautiful art form of poetry to listeners all over the world.
It was good to talk to Janie and Evan, and it seemed like a very interesting project, and please visit the link in the show notes so you can revisit the poetry podcast for the Princeton Public Library. But now it looks like we're at the end of another Technology and the Arts podcast. John, anything you'd like to share with the audience?
Well, as always, I'd like to say to our listeners that if you have an idea for a story or know about a show or event related to technology or art, to let us know about it by emailing us at technology.arts@gmail.com. Also, feel free to send an email just to say hi. And you are always welcome to leave a comment on the Technology and the Arts blog.
Well, that closes the curtain on another Technology and the Arts podcast. Stay tuned for more news, interviews, and resources related to technology and the arts when we come back with our next show. As mentioned earlier, we'll be taking an extra week off because of the Memorial Day holiday weekend, so we will be back with another podcast on June 6, 2007 at techarts.wordpress.com. Keep an eye on the Technology and the Arts blog for information about that show. So until then, for Technology and the Arts, this is Brian Kelly.
And this is John Lemazny. Take care.
For more information about the podcast you have just heard, please visit Technology and the Arts on the web at techarts.wordpress.com.